This is a sound test for the Joint Stream Restoration and Species Recovery Committee meeting Monday, November 8th, 1999, Hearing Room F. Representative Ken Meserly, Senator Ted Farioli, co-chairs.
Good morning, and welcome to the November 8th edition of the Joint Interim Committee on Stream Restoration and Species Recovery. Today we have quite an ambitious agenda, so the chair is going to endeavor to keep us on the agenda. There already have been some changes. I understand that Mike Tehan from National Marine Fisheries Service, who is here to talk, or was scheduled to talk about the federal access management plans, will not be joining us today due to illness. We regret that. Wish him recovery. Before we turn to today's agenda, however, I'd like to call the members' attention to an article that's been distributed by staff relative to Mr. Eugene A. Green Sr., who is a Warm Springs tribal elder, who was very instrumental in shaping the Columbia River salmon recovery plan and the tribal interests in that. And he has passed away, and I would like to ask the members to join me in a brief moment of silence in honor of Mr. Green's contributions to salmon management in Oregon. Thank you. The issues before us today are some emergency board requests, and let's launch right into those, and I'll turn the issue over to our capable staff for orientation of members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the first item of business before us today is an emergency board request that's coming from the Department of Administrative Services that will go to the emergency board at its December meeting. It's asking for a request to increase expenditure authority for other funds in the amount of $20,000 that is due to a grant received from the Ford Foundation as a result of the fact that the Oregon plan is one of 25 finalists in the competition at the Kennedy School of Government that relates to excellence in government. So Paula Burgess is here to tell us more about that request.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to this request. We did compete for a grant award that was a Ford Foundation, John F. Kennedy School of Government award, and won the first round, and were actually considered within a group of finalists for a $100,000 award, and we did not make the $100,000 award, and there are probably a number of factors that netted that result. And one of them, we think perhaps, is that the state of Oregon has won this award before. I think there was a sense that Oregon has gotten its kind of share of funds from that source. In addition, because of schedule conflicts, the governor did not go make an appearance at the National Press Club that would have been the decision point to receive the award. So we got lots of accolades for the Oregon plan, but didn't bring home any additional money, the $100,000 that we had hoped to. But we did make it into the finalist round, and so get a grant of $20,000. And our what we'd like to do with this, as we requested in the grant application, is to use this as a package to let people broadly know in Oregon what the Oregon plan is, how to participate, what they can do, who to be in contact with, and that kind of thing. So there's a specific breakdown. We have some roughly half of that amount going to public service announcements, a campaign of what the Oregon Plan is all about. A press kit is a small piece of that, $500 Oregon Plan Awards, recognizing the kinds of activities that people are doing that really are benefiting Oregon and salmonid restoration. And then the final piece is a fund for community grants, some monies that would go to communities to produce community salmon or watershed restoration festivals, that kind of thing.
Questions from the committee? I think it's a good thing to hold up the activities of the Oregon Plan, and I think people ought to know that it is a matter of national interest at this point. You know, it's one of those issues that really puts a lot of focus on the state and a lot of focus on the Oregon Plan, but it's also sort of a reinvention in government. You don't really see people trying to make the a state plan essentially meet the objectives and exceed the objectives of the Endangered Species Act. And I'm frankly a little bit, and I'm sure the governor's disappointed at not being able to make his schedule work to be at the press club to make that presentation, but I think this award is well-deserved, and it's a nice thing to be able to share with the citizens of Oregon. So if we're going to take action on this, we need to go into a work session. Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paula, is this seed money for other funds, or is this the total amount of funds that will be spent for this?
Mr. Chairman, we view this grant, and in our application, we made it clear what we would propose to use those funds for. They may, in fact, become seeds for additional contributions, but we view other grants that we give to watershed councils, soil and water conservation districts, those kinds of things. We didn't see this as an opportunity to leverage funds. We saw this as an opportunity to provide needed funding for an outreach program, which we have really never had a very good outreach program.
I can follow up, Mr. Chair. I think there's a need for more education and more involvement. I am concerned, however, though, just this past weekend attending the Columbia River Governance Committee, I guess, Legislative Committee. And then yesterday I was reading some of the information we had prepared for our meeting today. It was mailed to us. And I'm concerned that the story is right. There's a lot of assumptions, I think, that are being made right now, such as the effect of the dams and whether the dams should come out, or what is the cause of some of the issues with our salmon and our fisheries and our water quality. And as I read through those things and I receive the reports, I have not seen the science that makes that blunt statement. And so I'm concerned that we tell the right story and that we don't get the public off on an emotional basis, more based on the facts, the reality, and the impacts, and those kind of things.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Messerly, I hear that caution, and we will do our best to make sure that what we put out is broadly acceptable to this committee. And I think that, frankly, there's so much that we agree on that is the absolute right thing to do for all of us in Oregon, that we don't need to step into those areas that are questionable, in particular in a small grant like this one. I see no need to do that, but we'll keep that in mind.
Further questions from the committee? If not, it's the chairman's inclination to go into work session and accept the motion to increase the other funds limitation to accept the Ford Foundation grant. Question? We are in work session on the committee. I will accept motions from the committee.
Move to accept, Mr. Chair.
Senator Tarnow moves that we accept the Ford Foundation grant by way of increasing the other funds limitation for the Department of Administrative Services. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I have a question, point of order.
Mr. Chair.
Does this also approve the authorization to expend those funds?
I believe it would.
Yes. Usually it takes two actions, and we're doing this only one.
Yeah, we can only recommend to E-Board.
Right.
We'd love to be able to spend the money directly, but... So our recommendation would be considered at the next E-Board meeting.
No, let me still clarify. Usually they have to get authorization to receive the funds. Mm-hmm. Then they have to come back and get up from the E-Board and get authorization to expend those funds. Yeah. Are we recommending both things?
If the maker's motion...
Mr. Chair, we just move to accept the funds. Well, it's expended, will be up to the E-Board, I would think.
Can I clarify your
question?
Let's go ahead and if there are no objections to increasing the other funds limitation for the Department of Administrative Services for the purpose of accepting the Ford Foundation grant, hearing no objections, so ordered. Thank you. So the recommendation will come from this committee to the Legislative Emergency Board to increase the other funds limitations to accept the Ford Foundation grant. Congratulations, everyone.
Thank you.
There's another Emergency Board request before us, and that is for the Willamette Restoration Initiative position request. There's an executive order and a position request, and Ms. Burgess will present those as well.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you once again, Paula Burgess, with the governor's office, rifling through her papers to find the sheet that tells me about this request. As most of you know, we have been talking with some of you about this request for a number of months. It was a recommendation made during the legislative session that funds be set aside in the E-Board to fund a position that would provide a link between the Willamette Restoration Initiative Board and the executive branch and the legislature. And we think it is really critical to have this link between this board and the executive and legislative branches. And so that's the request that's before you today. It would basically fund one position that would become involved in Willamette board activities and report those to the legislature, ensure that this body in particular was aware of the actions that the Willamette Restoration Initiative Board was involved in, the planning and the strategic plan developments that they would be involved in, and making sure that our office, the governor's office, as well, was aware of these activities. Excuse me. There had been some concerns expressed about the nature of this position and whether, actually, about less about this position, I think, than about the Willamette Restoration Initiative Board itself and the fact that it was an independent body, independent of the executive and legislative branches. In fact, we don't view it as an independent body, because if it does come up with recommendations for actions in the Willamette Valley, those have to come back through both the legislature and the executive branch in order to have funding provided for them. We have proposed a number of changes in the executive order, because this is a very real issue. We proposed a number of changes in the executive order to make it clear that the Willamette Restoration Initiative Board needs to coordinate carefully with the legislative branch. And I'm assuming that memo is in your packet. Okay. It is a draft addendum to the executive order, which does make particular changes, which include ensuring that the Legislative Assembly is informed on issues. It provides the Legislative Assembly with an opportunity to participate, including providing a full member of the Willamette Restoration Initiative Board, if that is something that this legislature is interested in doing. It adds, amendments to the executive order that identify the fact that there are potential here, there's a need here for better communication. It would require that bi-monthly progress reports be made both to the governor and to appropriate committees of the Legislative Assembly, which include budget expenditures of the Willamette Restoration Initiative. These are just some of the highlights since you have this in your packet. It also does repeal the executive order that created the Willamette Restoration Initiative effective June 30th, 2001. And so I believe that we have addressed the key issues, the concerns that this committee has expressed about the Willamette Restoration Initiative. We're very positive in the work that they've done to date. They've been working very collaboratively. It is a strong group of individuals with broad representation. We do think it's very important that they that they are linked to government, and that's the purpose for the changes in the executive order. So, Mr. Chairman, that's why we are requesting it.
Sure. Recognize the co-chair, Representative Messerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow on number 7 of the job description. Advise the GNRO and the governor's office on issues of importance. Will the legislature be advised of that, get copy of that advice, or how will we be incorporated into
Mr. Chairman,
recommendations?
In the, I'm not sure I'm going to answer your question directly, and if I don't, ask me again, but the addendum to the executive order now would specify that all of the information that was received by the Willamette Restoration Initiative Board would also be received at the same time by this legislative committee. So through that process, you would have all of the information that they had. In addition, you would also have potentially a member on that body that would provide that link.
Hello, Mr. Chair. I was referring to the job description for the coordinator. I was referring to advice they give to the governor and the governor's office, or that individual gives to the governor and the governor's office. Will we receive that information as well? All the other descriptions include both the governor's office and the legislature. On number 7, it did not include the legislature.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that that would be an oversight, and we can that's something that we can add to the position description. In my view, if that person is making recommendations, they would also be making those same recommendations to this body.
Yeah. One more follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Paula, when do you expect the governor will sign this executive order?
Mr. Chairman, we could do that within about 2 weeks.
Would it be a problem in any way, do you think, if we put a condition on our recommendation upon the signature of this executive order?
I don't see that as a problem.
Further? Question, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I had is this position going to be funded under your current limitation, or you're asking for an additional resources? It's not noted in our materials here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, that's an interesting question. I believe that we have limitation that would cover that, but I would have to find that out. Louise Soliday may also know, who's on my staff. She's shaking her head.
I'll rescue you.
Better patter of little feet behind you.
Louise Soliday, Governor's Natural Resources Office. The legislature put $184,240 in the emergency board fund to fund this position. We had some things we needed to do before we came back and made the request. The request will actually be for $169,000 and some odd dollars, because it'll be less than a full biennium of funding.
Great, thank you.
Further? Committee, let me back up a little bit here and just remind us all that there was quite a bit of heartburn with the way the WRI was originally constituted by executive order. We discussed that numerous times during the legislative session, and that engendered ongoing discussions between the governor's staff and the staff and members of our committee about how we might maybe realign the executive order and connect those dots a little closer. And this essentially is in response to our request to have more clarification about what is the understanding of the role of the WRI and its relationship to this committee, this oversight committee. And in those discussions, there's an assertion that we're going to get their budget recommendations, we're going to see their way the money goes through to the committees, we're going to see their planning efforts and their direction. At the same time, their board sees it, and I think that is very helpful. And as a matter of fact, it's sort of predicated, as co-chairman mentioned, on our approval of the position. So I think the issue has been one of open communication between the executive and the legislative branch on how we make WRI a much easier organization to connect with in terms of information and direction, so that we, who have the responsibility in the legislature for the oversight role, get the information we need to conduct that role. And I have seen the a governor's office and staff be quite open to that, to making those connections work. So that's the proposal that we have before us today, is a modification of the executive order essentially at our request, and then the request for us to consider approval of that position in the governor's office. How'd I do? Okay, good. So the questions before us then, in fact, are do we have comment on the draft that we have before us for the changes in the executive order? And if so, this is the appropriate time to make those. And we also need to approve or disapprove the position request that's also before us, knowing that we created this position in the legislative session and reserved expenditure limitation within the agency for this position. Questions on the issues? We are still in work session, by the way.
Mr. Chair, I have a comment.
Representative Messerly, co-chair.
At least from my perspective, it was absolutely key two things. Number one, the sunset of the, and then we'll take a look at some of the other issues we had at that time. And number two was the ability to appoint a member of this committee, or whoever we so designate, to that board. And I think that really ties it all together. For me, at least, for the next year and a half.
And some of the members have requested to copy the full text of the executive order, and the staff's gone to get those for us. I suggest what we do while we wait for those comments is move to the next agenda item and come back. So, because I'm going to try and keep us on track today, schedule-wise. We're going to go ahead and move to the next issue. We have an informational meeting on the Willamette Restoration Board and Work Group Priority. And I believe that Mitch Bashdash are here, and we have a board member also this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee, I'm Bill Gaffey. I'm the vice chair of the Willamette Restoration Initiative. In my other life, I serve as the general manager of the Unified Sewerage Agency in Washington County, and appreciate the opportunity to brief you today on the activities of the Restoration Initiative. Dr. Risser was unable to be here today. I'm sure he would have liked to have joined the committee. I suspect that he's probably hoarse from the Saturday's ball game is what I think might really be going on, but I'm sure that's not the case. He had an unavoidable conflict.
For the record, in case there's someone living in a cave that doesn't understand that the
beavers
pulled one off, and they have a winning season now for the first time. Is it 25 years?
Something like that.
28.
28 years? Yeah. But who's counting?
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
I'm joined by Rick Bashdash, the executive director of the Restoration Initiative. I think it's truly timely that at this point that we strengthen our relationship with this committee and focus on how we're going to work closely together as we move forward, particularly due to the fact that we're now embarking upon the task of identifying actual things that need to be done. and the rubber is starting to hit the road. So I think this is the time to really engage the activities of the initiative. So without further delay, I'd like to ask Rick to share with you some information about the strategy development process. Rick?
Thank you, Bill. Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee, I'd also like to point out, I was going to point out another board member in our audience, Dick Angstrom. You probably saw him fleetingly. He's around. I just wanted you to know he was there, too. And in terms of our issue today, as outlined to you in the materials, we had hoped to talk through our strategy development process with particular attention to timeline so that we can match up your schedule, our schedule, to make sure that we have the information exchange that we need to have. We also indicated that we'd like to go through a questionnaire with you. We gave our board a questionnaire the week before last to begin to probe for where that 26-member board has areas of agreement or disagreement, where they're coming from essentially in terms of their ideas on restoration. We found that a pretty useful, I think, exercise with the board, and would propose to go through it with you with your permission. And then we could move on to any questions you might have regarding the materials that we sent you over a week ago. It's the packet that has the colored paper in it. So that's sort of an overview of what we hope to do today. And with that, I would like to call your attention to the Willamette Restoration Initiative Strategy Development Timeline Narrative. That's in your packet. This happens to be a green copy. Yours is on white paper. Looks like this. It's a table that attempts to put down in words a chart that we showed you last time that maybe was a little bit too busy. But I, without taking up too much of your time, I did want to call out a few key milestones and maybe point out the theory of our strategy development process, if I could. You'll note that we have board meetings. We had one October 26th. We have another board meeting on December 9th, and we have a retreat setting board meeting scheduled for January 19th and 20th, and we'll be happy to keep you informed about all the materials that will be associated with that, and give you more information about where those meetings are so that you may attend. Beyond January, we're looking at some stakeholder workshops with hopefully the presentation, the submittal of a draft Willamette Restoration Strategy, both to this body, the legislature, and the governor's office in late March. Those are the kind of key dates for us. And what that says about our development process is that between now and January 19th and 20th, we're trying to work with existing information, existing organizations, and with some newly formed work groups to highlight some strategies for the board's consideration that address some of our goals and the issues that we explained, I think we described to you last time. That engenders a lot of folks meeting. You have a list of our work groups that we have four strategy development work groups, one on clean water, one on healthy habitat, one on accountable institutions, and one on what we call community vitality. Our attempt is to essentially take advantage of as many people as we can in getting their ideas about what we ought to do, and bring those ideas in front of the board again on December 9th and January 19th and 20th. So you have in your packet a list of those work groups and the participants that they're interested people and participants both that we're keeping in contact with during this process. We know we have other obligations as well. For example, we're meeting I guess it is next week, with watershed councils because we're instructed to work closely with them, and we want to be sure that the work that they're doing on the ground right now, their watershed assessments, their watershed action plans, are well incorporated into what we're doing, and so we're reserving some time for them. And I guess I would like to say that during this development process, we'll be trying to get the big picture in front of the board, have the board discuss that. Our first attempt to do that is this questionnaire that we'll be addressing in just a second. And the whole intent here is to get together the best draft we can for presentation to the legislature and the governor in late March. And we think the best way we can do that is not only through a broad process of participation, but also some targeted workshops. We think in late February, early March, we're planning on 3 stakeholder workshops. We think 60 to 90 people per workshop. Development timeline narrative. That's in your packet. This happens to be a green copy. Yours is on white paper. Looks like this. It's a table that attempts to put down in words a chart that we showed you last time that maybe was a little bit too busy. But I without taking up too much of your time, I did want to call out a few key milestones and maybe point out the theory of our strategy development process, if I could. You'll note that we have board meetings. We had one October 26th. We have another board meeting on December 9th, and we have a retreat-setting board meeting scheduled for January 19th and 20th, and we'll be happy to keep you informed about all the materials that will be associated with that and give you more information about where those meetings are so that you may attend. Beyond January, we're looking at some stakeholder workshops with hopefully the presentation, the submittal of a draft Willamette restoration strategy both to this body, the legislature, and the governor's office in late March. Those are the kind of key dates for us. And what that says about our development process is that between now and January 19th and 20th, we're trying to work with existing information, existing organizations, and with some newly formed work groups to highlight some strategies for the board's consideration that address some of our goals and the issues that we explained, I think we described to you last time. That engenders a lot of folks meeting. You have a list of our work groups that we have 4 strategy development work groups, one on clean water, one on healthy habitat, one on accountable institutions, and one on what we call community vitality. Our attempt is to essentially take advantage of as many people as we can in getting their ideas about what we ought to do and bring those ideas in front of the board again on December 9th and January 19th and 20th. So you have in your packet a list of those work groups and the participants that they're interested people and participants both that we're keeping in contact with during this process. We know we have other obligations as well. For example, we're meeting next week with watershed councils because we're instructed to work closely with them. And we want to be sure that the work that they're doing on the ground right now, their watershed assessments, their watershed action plans, are well incorporated into what we're doing, and so we're reserving some time for them. I would like to say that during this development process, we'll be trying to get the big picture in front of the board, have the board discuss that. Our first attempt to do that is this questionnaire that we'll be addressing in just a second. And the whole intent here is to get together the best draft we can for presentation to the legislature and the governor in late March. And we think the best way we can do that is not only through a broad process of participation, but also some targeted workshops. We think in late February, early March, we're planning on 3 stakeholder workshops. We think 60 to 90 people per workshop, people, practitioners, drawn from agriculture, forestry, the urban landscape, government, watershed councils, and more, so that we have where we have some ideas that the board has approved, to get them out early in a focused process so that the people who are ultimately the implementers, the landowners, government officials of local government, can have a preview, if you will, and then we can take their input and work it back through the board before bringing it to you for review and approval. I would say that getting the best draft we can together for submittal to you in late March or April is only is really the beginning of a process. We anticipate that should we do our job right and keep our lines of communication open, we would hope that in March we would maybe with some modification get approval from both the governor's office and the legislature to say this is a draft strategy worth taking on the road and getting intensive public review, and then bringing it back after that public review process that would go from April, say, through October, to make sure that we've done a good job of going out to the public in a variety of ways to make sure that what we are proposing makes sense. Chair Farioli, that's a summary of our timeline. I don't know if this would be a good time to pause and ask questions, but I'd certainly be happy to try to answer any.
Thank you, Mr. Pastor. You said it was going to be an ambitious work schedule, and it is. 10 different working groups meeting at least two different types times, and then a draft process out, and then a feedback to a workshop where 60 to 90 people in three different stakeholder workshops are engaged, and then another draft out for comments from the legislature and the governor's office, and then a final all by October of next year is pretty ambitious work schedule.
Chair Farioli, I'm struck by that ambition daily. I think it is an ambitious schedule. It will require a lot of attention and a lot of help. I think we've been fortunate in getting that kind of help. Our work groups, our board meetings, I guess everywhere where it could have fallen apart so far, it's stuck together, and I think people seem engaged. That doesn't diminish, I think, the dimension of the task in front of us, but I guess I'm cautiously optimistic that this is more than feasible. I think it's likely, and if we can continue to engage the interests of the folks in this basin.
One of the things that strikes me is that this is analogous to the statutory requirements of an environmental impact statement, but none of this is statutory. This is not driven by a regulatory requirement being placed on a community. It's entirely voluntary, which, you know, I think if we're able to come through this ambitious work plan and deliver a product to the legislature and the governor's office, and what happens after the WRI delivers this product is anybody's guess, but the idea is that if it has succeeded in delivering a product that was a voluntary product completely produced by community effort rather than a statutory requirement, I think it'll be a real interesting corollary model to show people that it can be done by communities without a strong regulatory driver. I think it's worth doing just on that basis. Notwithstanding that, it'll be interesting to see how that product looks and how it can be incorporated into the Oregon plan. I guess the only question I have is you have identified stakeholders and you've identified the working group members by invitation. What mechanisms are there for participating just members of the public who are not identified stakeholders or workshop participants?
Chair Farioli, what we're trying to do is make this process known in every forum that we attend. For example, any speaking engagements that provides us a point of invitation for people to become involved in the process. It's explained on our website. We distribute information relative to this to our mailing list. So we're not concentrating on our work groups and our invitees to the exclusion of other members of the public. But we'd welcome any additional suggestions people might have on how we broaden that.
Question, Co-Chair Messler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bastage, I appreciate the information you sent us a couple of weeks ago. I think that's very helpful to get those reports from the different committees as they're doing their draft work and presenting that forward. But I believe one of the work groups even mentioned that they were having trouble getting participation. And when I looked at some of the recommendations, I became concerned as to if in part of their minutes or their report they could show who was on the committee appointed, but also who attended, because I think that's really key. It looked to me like potentially at least brought to my mind that there might have been some imbalance, at least when they made the recommendations. And again, as I alluded to earlier in this committee, I was concerned if some of those recommendations are really backed up by facts or if there's an agenda that someone has that's starting to appear.
Chair Ferrioli, Representative Messerly, thank you. That's, I think in terms of a warts and all sort of discussion of this process, what we've discovered is that with so many work group meetings, and these aren't the only work groups we have several others, we're finding that in some cases the attendance, the attendees are those who can afford to be there. The organizations, whether government or otherwise, kind of pay their freight to come to a meeting, they're there and they're engaged and it's great. But I think what we've discovered, and I think you saw a reference to that by one of our work group leaders, is that we need to keep our eyes out for any kind of imbalance. And it may be that we can do that a couple ways by increasing our invitation or our phone calls to encourage people to come. Or it may be that we have to take the meeting to them or the products to them. And I think we'll be working with our strategy committee chair, Sarah Vickerman, and our executive committee to do that. It's something we're aware of. We haven't fixed it yet, but it's on our minds, because without knowing it, just by the process itself, so many meetings, it can lead to a unconscious, perhaps, setup, and we wouldn't want that.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up. Very briefly. I think when I spoke, I was talking about the committee membership and those of the committee that attended, but I'd also be interested in who else participated in each of those committees. I'm sure that you have state and federal agencies that are present, and if we knew, and people from the general public, it would be helpful. So we got the full picture of where the information was coming from and where the decision came from.
Chair Farrelly, Representative Messerly, we'll make sure to have our work group leaders take attendance and make that part of their record, and so that should, I hope, show who's there and who's not.
Thank you.
And one other thing, if I could, I meant in my previous answer, you talked about science, and I wanted to explain to you a booklet that was distributed to you today. It looks like this. It's called Restoring the Willamette Basin: Strategic Issues and Challenges. It's our attempt to have someone take a snapshot of the condition of the basin in terms of the science that's been done on it to frame some institutional issues. It was quite frankly put together quickly to inform or provoke the board, but it does have sort of an inventory, if you will, of the scientific literature on the basin. So it's not our only source of information, but it's a starting point for us, and I wanted you to understand that that's what's in front of you there.
Okay. Any further questions?
Thank you. I'd like to also thank the initiative for reaching out to the legislature. I think that the information that you've sent us and the willingness that you've shown to form a partnership is going to go a long way to help make the end result of this be something that's worthwhile doing. When I was reading through the work groups, one of the things that struck me about it was that there seemed to be an awful lot of impacts on the rural areas of the Willamette Valley, and it didn't seem to me that there was very much energy being directed towards the urban areas. What's the board going to do in that respect?
Chair Ferrioli, Representative Morgan, when I mentioned some other work groups, it's an embarrassment of riches in some ways, and sometimes just an embarrassment how many we've got working for us. But one is what we're trying to pull together is called the Willamette Urban Watershed Network. And there we have about 50 people that have met since June over, regularly, and we're meeting again next week, November 16th, to address the urban landscapes impacts and responsibilities vis-a-vis the Endangered Species Act and the Clean Water Act. I don't think it's any secret that to date, I think our rural communities statewide have had firsthand experience with the Endangered Species Act, less so the urban communities. And I think Vice Chair Gaffey can speak to this from his day-to-day work in the Tualatin, but there are a lot of questions, a lot of confusion in our urban communities about what the listings mean and what needs to be done to comply with the Endangered Species Act. So we're trying to work with the urban communities, and we have representatives from all the subspecies of urban people that there are, we think, planners, transportation workers, storm water, wastewater, water supply, and I'm forgetting a few, but we're trying to help that group develop some issue papers so that it can clarify to decision makers, councils, county commissions, and the like, what the issues are and what the obligations may be in our urban setting.
Chair Farioli, Representative Morgan, I might add one thing to that. This coalition of urban interests have come together and jointly funded a consulting effort to help develop a manual of how to go about wrestling this issue to the ground in terms of urban activities and urban practices. And so everybody doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. Everybody doesn't have to develop an erosion control program from scratch. Everybody doesn't have to do all of these elements without the benefit of others' experience. So that is underway and will feed through this process as well.
One of the interesting byproducts then of the process. Other questions for the committee? Representative Morgan.
Do you have any kind of a ballpark date on when you'll have some output from that committee?
Chair Farioli, Representative Morgan, we have 9 very draft issue papers now that we should be receiving revisions on the 9th. So as those come in, allow me to share them with you and or the committee. Judith, maybe I can talk to you about distribution. They're going to be all over the place in terms of format, probably, but the intention is to have them revised and refined so that they can, you'll see them again, I think, in the December 9th packet that goes to the board, is all I'm saying.
May I have one more follow-up?
Absolutely.
Chair?
The other thing that struck me in going through these packages was when you said reinventing the wheel, that really did strike a chord with me, because it would seem that there are already on the ground a huge mess of programs that deal with a lot of the issues that are raised in these work groups. And I was wondering what the board was doing. Are you anywhere down the road in the process of trying to put these into some kind of groupings and...
Chair Farioli, Representative Morgan, we are a ways down the road and have a lot more to do, because there is a lot happening in the space and a lot of good stuff. One thing is we're close to finaling this restoration and conservation program inventory for the basin to know who's doing what, not project by project, but program by program within the basin. And the final on this should be done within a month. And and I can... we have limited copies, and I'll see, I'll at least get a copy to Judith, and to give you an idea of what the final might look like. And this is not only an inventory of programs, it's an inventory of practitioners' perceptions of obstacles. If somebody's working on a conservation program in the basin, we ask them, what's working for you, what's working against you, and what do you want WRI to do, what do you want it not to do? That's in there too. So we think this inventory approach is one thing that we can do. Secondly, to recognize all that's going on in the basin, we specifically asked our work groups, as they developed responses to these goals and issues, if you look at the issues as problem statements, we asked them specifically to say, okay, what's working for us right now to address this problem? What's already happening? And what more may need to happen. So our starting point is what is happening now. And actually, there's a question on our questionnaire that addresses that point about not reinventing the wheel. And I think we have language like that in our executive order, and we're trying to take it seriously. And the other thing, too, is that we have an opportunity, I think, here to recognize the good work that's happening in the basin, not a doom and gloom kind of strategy in March, I hope, but something that begins to shine a light on and begins to harmonize a lot of the good things that are happening out there right now. So I guess there's two main ways we're trying to do that now.
Other questions? Representative Messler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In reading through parts of the packet, institutional accountability, goals and issues, I think is where I read quite a bit about my issue that I'm concerned about now, and that is there's a lot of statements made about the need for more funding for technical staff and coordinating staff and different aspects of that. And I had a sense that where are we going with this? Are we trying to build a huge empire in each of these local offices or watersheds? And it seemed to me, at least I've always felt, that the value of the Oregon plan was that we allow the people at the grassroots to first of all identify the problems and then identify the solutions to those problems, and if they need funding or technical assistance, someone else could provide that to them, such as the universities or the NRCS, and I'm sure there's a whole host of other experts out there that can provide that service. I think it's important they have that service, but I'm really cautious that we don't build up a whole bunch of staff that would be very expensive and unmanageable to some degree, but we do provide on a contractual basis or something to those kind of services.
Chair Ferrioli, Representative Messerly, I hear you. I think that is, I wouldn't be surprised if that's not the sort of acid wash provided by our board, because, you know, as you're talking to work groups, and a lot of them are workers, they're going to bring forward their frustrations about having their programs funded. I think it's the role of the board, and hopefully a helpful one to the legislature and the governor, to observe, you know, how existing resources might be redirected, how existing incentive programs might be, maybe you don't need any more money for them, maybe you just need simpler regulations or something. I think the board's going to have a pretty interesting discussion about how to pull that off. In some instances, maybe there are some, I'm sure there are particulars that need more funding, but I hear you in your reading of what the work group has come up with to date.
If I can follow up and expand that just to some degree, it would seem to me that there's two issues that really have been holding back our Oregon plan, and one of them is a lack of consensus or understanding of what should be done, what can be done, and the other obstacle, a major obstacle, I think, even more important than funding, is to how do I get through the process. And I really believe that if we would focus more on that, we could get a lot more done for a lot less money. I know a lot of private sector who simply would love to do something, but they're afraid to open the can of worms, number one. They don't know how to get through the process, and if they to get them through the process is very expensive. As an example of that, if I can find DEQ today, I want to talk to them. There's a case down in my district where an individual wanted to build a wetland, and the permit fee that DEQ gave them was horrendous, and they wanted to voluntarily, no mitigation, no anything. They just wanted to build a wetland, and it's those kinds of obstacles that I think we need to be conscious about.
If I might respond to that, Chair Ferrioli, Co-Chair Messerly, I think you've put your finger on an important issue. You know, there's a whole bunch of rules that are written to keep bad things from happening that also prevent good things from happening. And I think we need to look at that and try to make more sense out of that. And that's going to take a lot of cooperation amongst various agencies, however. But it is a serious issue.
Colleagues, we have a couple of issue items before us that we need to take action. And I'd like to bring this portion of our meeting to closure. And so if anybody has any additional questions on the WRI, now's the time. Representative Jensen?
I would just like to echo what Representative Murphy was saying. As I read through this, I was struck with what the potential cost would be at the growth of this. And the more I read, the more I wondered how are we ever going to, who's going to pay, what portion, other portion of society is going to have to pay in order to be able to find the money to do these things. I began to see the building of a of another huge state agency, and I think somewhere in my notes I have a note to that effect that this sounds like a new large state agency, you know, to me. And so I just share that concern, and I hear that you're aware of that. But you'll probably hear us all riding that horse again or something.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. I think you've expressed the concerns, or echoed the concern of other members as well. Colleagues, we are still in work session. We have a few items that we need to discuss for action today. Let me walk us through those items with the assistance of staff, and with a little help, maybe we can see where we have been, and then where we are today, and then where we will go with our committee action today. As you remember, Executive Order EO 98-18, a copy of which has been distributed to you, and the cover looks like this, recaps the creation of the Willamette Restoration Initiative and Board of Directors. As a result of some concerns of this body, a request that was made to the executive, or to the Legislative Emergency Board, for the release of funds that were previously budgeted for the Governor's Natural Resource Office position was denied. We recommended against approval, and that was put off until later. In consideration of a discussion about how the executive order that created the Willamette Board, the Willamette Initiative Project, might be changed, and that draft of changes is now in your hand, and I call your attention to this document. It's marked draft. It has two pages. And I think the interesting stuff is all about the changes that reflect on the second page of that draft. And I'll just recap that. 2A is part of the Willamette Basin Amendments, the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. WRI is to identify the major problems that need to be addressed and to provide general guidance on the strategies for those problems. B, to deliver progress reports to the governor and the appropriate committees of the Legislative Assembly, which is our oversight committee, including a periodic accounting of the budget expenditures and receipts of WRI. So the question of accountability and fiscal accountability is addressed in this proposed amendment to the executive order. It also affords, under C, the legislative branch a full opportunity to participate in the work of WRI and to comment effectively on that work. And as I understood the discussion, that is up to and including appointment of a member of the legislature to the WRI board, so there's a direct connection. And also D, work with watershed councils, soil water conservation districts to assist them in their missions. And then subsequently is an admonition that the board is not to carry on any governmental authority over entities, or to represent itself as a governmental agency, or to supersede the authority of watershed councils or soil water conservation districts or any other agencies. And then fourth, a further admonition that all the agencies that worked with WRI are to keep the Legislative Assembly informed. In other words, it's a very strong recapitulation of our desire to see the executive order changed to tightly connect the information flow and to give us an opportunity to exercise our legislative oversight issues over the budget of WRI and how those dollars are expended in restoration activities, which are authorized to this committee by a state statute. So I think it's a significant modification of the executive order. And we have the assurance that the executive order will be executed. And we also have a request for the position to be authorized through the executive board. Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, in this draft, where's the language that pertains to the sunsetting?
As a matter of fact, I just asked that same question, and I think that staff is looking for that sunset language right now.
And also the language regarding the appointment of a member from this body.
And perhaps we could bring up Ms. Soliday. There's a page coming, and the page is here. Here's the page. Okay. Okay, and the number six on the, or no, actually number five, is the issue that allows the jointly appointed member of the Legislative Assembly to the WRI board, and that joint appointment would be made by the Speaker of the House and President of the Senate. And also, the executive order would sunset on June 30th, 2001.
So, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, we take the second page off of this and put this one
in? Yeah, the final draft is the draft that we just had distributed moments ago. It may still be warm. Chairman regrets having this caused to be distributed an earlier version of the draft. That's the draft we're considering this morning. Okay. The WRI is to identify the major problems that need to be addressed and to provide general guidance on the strategies for those problems. B, to deliver progress reports to the governor and the appropriate committees of the Legislative Assembly, which is our oversight committee, including a periodic accounting of the budget expenditures. So the question of accountability and fiscal accountability is addressed in this proposed amendment to the executive order. It also affords under C the legislative branch of full opportunity to participate in the work of WRI and to comment effectively on that work. And as I understood the discussion, that is up to and including appointment of a member of the legislature to the WRI board, so there's a direct connection. And also D, work with watershed councils, soil water conservation districts to assist them in their missions. And then subsequently is an admonition that the board is not to carry on any governmental authority over entities or to represent itself as a governmental agency or to supersede the authority of watershed councils or soil water conservation districts or any other agencies. And then fourth, a further admonition that all the agencies that worked with WRI are to keep the Legislative Assembly informed. In other words, it's a very strong recapitulation of our desire to see the executive order changed to tightly connect the information flow and to give us an opportunity to exercise our legislative oversight issues over the budget of WRI and how those dollars are expended in restoration activities, which are authorized to this committee by state statute. So I think it's a significant modification of the executive order, and we have the assurance that the executive order will be executed, and we also have a request for the position to be authorized through the executive board. Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, in this draft, where's the language that pertains to the sunsetting?
As a matter of fact, I just asked that same question, and I think that staff is looking for that sunset language right now.
And also the language regarding the appointment of a member from this body.
And perhaps we could bring up Ms. Soliday. There's a page coming, and the page is here. Here's the page. Okay. Okay, and number six on the, or no, actually number five,
is the issue that allows the jointly appointed member of the Legislative Assembly to the WRI board, and that joint appointment would be made by the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate. And also, the executive order would sunset on June 30th, 2001.
So, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, we take the second page off of this and put this one
on? Yeah, the final draft is the draft that we just had distributed moments ago. It may still be warm. Chairman regrets having caused to be distributed an earlier version of the draft. That's the draft we're considering this month. Okay.
Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
I move that we recommend to the Emergency Board the funding of the NRO position on the condition that the executive order draft is signed by the governor prior to the Emergency Board meeting.
Did everybody on the committee hear and understand the motion? Is there any discussion on the motion? If everybody has heard and understood the motion, are there any objections to the motion?
And Mr. Chair, may I clarify too that we are talking, just so there's no further misunderstandings, that we are clarifying the draft with number 5 and 6.
The motion includes the appointment of a member to WRI's by the Speaker and the President to be appointed to the WRI board, and the sunset language in number 6. Is that the motion? Everyone understand the motion? Is there any objections to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. The recommendation will go forward to approve the WRI coordinator position in the governor's office subsequent to the execution of the provisions to the executive order, as indicated. Thank you. Let's go on to let's close our work session. Let's go on to the next order of business. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're at lunch. No, we actually have scheduled for Patty Dornbush from National Marine Fisheries Service, and she will talk about the 4-H program for the recovery planning process and others. Mr. Mike Tahan of National Marine Fisheries Service talking about the Federal Access Management Plan is ill today. He will not be here, so we'll defer that to another day. Today we'll move then to the VFW people. They are not here.
Yeah.
We will stand in at ease for a short period. We are at ease.
That's nice. How long are we at ease for?
Just 10 minutes. No longer. Colleagues, for your patience, we're still on schedule, and we have here today from National Marine Fisheries Service, Patty Dornbush, who will help us understand the recovery